You're listening to the Northtown Automotive Extra Point Show with Zach and Josh. Brought to you by Northtown Automotive. Whatever you're looking for, you'll find it at Northtown. Shop online at northtownauto.com.
Happy game day, everybody. Zach Jones and Josh Schmidt here on the Northtown Automotive Extra Point Show. We're having some fun technical difficulties about 30 seconds before we went on air. That was a lot of fun.
But we're on the air, so it's fine.
That was honestly perfect timing with the music, too.
It worked well. It worked very, very well. I was a little bit panicked, though. I can't lie to you. I was like, oh, no. Oh, no.
I had faith in you.
And me. It was our engineers. I was just standing here.
Yeah, that's fair.
I didn't do anything.
I had faith in them.
It is not a football Friday, but it is a football game day that is brought to you by Salino Law. Car crash, call Salino, and by Crosby's Pizza and Subs. Start your game day the Crosby way. Very excited for tonight. We're looking for your predictions. 803-0550, the number to call if you want to jump on. We are also waiting to hear from Sal Capaccio, who is down in Miami, so we'll hear from him in the next few minutes. Very, very excited, though, tonight, Josh. I was talking last night on the nightcap how much, like, I want to be nervous because, you know, it's a Bills game day. Miami is a good team. I get it. And ultimately, I'm just like, until they prove they can beat the Bills on a regular basis, I just find myself not being that nervous. I just find myself being excited. But let's go to the Western Hotline as Sal Capaccio joins the show from down in South Florida. Sal, how's the weather, man?
It is right now. I'm looking out my hotel window, and it's pretty overcast. Sun's starting to shine through a little bit. You know, it's got the, you know, it's that early morning rain that gets burned through. You know, the clouds that burns through in Florida. And I just, you know, it's that time of year, guys. You just don't know. You know, it'd be like, what's the weather going to be? I have no idea. I know you guys had hammer on yesterday. It's just, you never know when it's going to change down here. Yesterday, came down, flew down. When we got off the plane yesterday, it was sunny, but it was very wet on the ground. So it obviously had just rained. And then for a few hours, it was fine. And then go out last night, and all of a sudden, it just starts coming down like a monsoon for a good hour to hour and a half.
That is the fun summer weather in Florida. Pat was also saying
not gonna be fun tonight if that happens for the game. I'll tell you that.
That's what Pat was saying too. And he goes, there might be like some thunderstorms like around the area. And I'm just like sitting there as somebody that works the game. Sal, you'll get it too. Where I'm just like, oh no, the long night.
I'm also worried about staying up for the game and waking up early in the morning tomorrow to, you know, have to come into work. But hopefully, we don't have any of that tonight.
Yeah, and then obviously just being prepared for the elements when you're out here, right? I mean, like, it's a long night as it is, but, you know, being prepared as well, you know, how much it affects the game from a competitive standpoint for, you know, people who are going to the game. Like, if you're coming down here, a lot of Bills fans are down here, obviously, you know, just being ready to brave those storms if they're going to be rolling in. So everything you have to kind of be thinking about that.
So Ian Rapoport tweeted out about 15 minutes ago, just a little bit of an update on Devon Achane. We already know for Miami, Raheem Mostert's out, but it sounds like Achane is dealing with an ankle sprain. He's going to test it out tonight to see what his availability is against Buffalo. That seems to be maybe the bigger piece for Miami, though. Mostert, maybe they can survive without him, but Achane does seem to be the bigger piece. And if they're down two running backs, that seems to be – I know people like Jalen Wright out of Tennessee, Jeff Wilson as well, but that's going to be a big miss for them, isn't it?
Yeah, listen, I mean, even if he has an ankle sprain, he's playing. Like, what's the effectiveness if Achane plays? And sounds like from what Rapp tweeted out and what he's reporting, him and Cam Wolf, that – you know, there is optimism, as they said, that he would play. So I'm sure that they'll do whatever they can to tape him up and get him ready. And, you know, but then you have to worry about and wonder about availability. And then obviously without Mostert, you know, if he is not as available, then you have to turn to Jeff Wilson a little bit. So, and Jeff Wilson, I think, is a pretty good running back. But certainly a compromised Achane without a Mostert changes the dynamic of their running game. And that's what they do, right? They run the ball really well. They throw the ball, but they have all that speed. And, you know, you wonder – that's a type of player that relies on, you know, his speed and any kind of ankle injury to compromising him obviously is significant whether he plays or not.
You know, Sal, I was listening with you with Jeremy and Joe earlier this morning. You guys were talking a little bit about the defense as well. It looks like a bit of a different defense than the Bills have been used to seeing due to the, you know, injuries and stuff the Dolphins have suffered over the past few years. But Jalen Phillips is one of the guys that I'm a little worried about tonight. I mean, he's healthy, he's fully back, and, you know, what do you think that could mean for Allen's rushing ability along with, you know, just the offense in general?
Well, he's a handful, and, you know, they're going to have to be aware of where he is at all times on the field. He's a fantastic player, and for him to come back and play the way he did last week after having that Achilles injury just, you know, on Black Friday in November, you know, says a lot about him personally as well. But, you know, you look up and down that line, and they Calais Campbell is there, obviously. Zach Sealer's a nice player, but I don't think that they have like this overwhelming, you know, pass rush from top to bottom. I think that if you can concentrate on knowing where Jalen Phillips is, have a plan for him, you know, obviously you can do some things to mitigate that a little bit. And that's to me what the Bills will probably do. They'll probably have some sort of, you know, protections and calls and slides, knowing where Phillips is. You know, and Josh Allen, they've seen him before. He's played before. He's made some plays against the Bills. But this is not a unfamiliar opponent, as you guys know. It's not an unfamiliar personnel. They know what these guys are going to bring to the table. So certainly Jalen Phillips is a handful to deal with. But I'm sure the Bills will also have, you know, a plan to deal with him, where he is lined up, and, you know, how they want to attack that.
Sal, it's an 8:15 kickoff. It's well away. It is a long time here. What's the schedule like for the Bills, even yourself and the rest of the media members? Is it a lot of just kind of sitting around waiting, getting to the stadium early, or is there kind of a more of a structured plan going forward?
Yeah, it's a good question. I think a lot of people always wonder, like, you know, what happens on a game day when you have a nighttime game. And the team actually, they will have a walkthrough today. They'll do that. Typically, and I don't know, it's always... It's generally right here at the hotel. They don't like go off site or anything like that. Like there'll be a ballroom or something, you know, where they get in there and they show, okay, this show, this formation, you go here. It's, you know, it's a walkthrough. They could go outside and do it somewhere, but the point is like they'll get together for a walkthrough practice. They'll typically do that, you know, late morning, early afternoon. You know, they'll have treatments available for them for anybody injuries, getting their bodies right. They'll have a team lunch, you know, before they get ready. And then, you know, buses, there's different buses that start rolling out at different times. I'm always on, whether it's a Thursday night game or a Sunday morning game, Sunday afternoon game, you know, I'm always on one of the earlier buses before the players, the staff and radio crew. We get out there a little bit earlier. We have radio duties. So I'll be out there. My bus should get to the stadium. Actually, guys, let's see. I will tell you exactly when I'll be there. I should be at the stadium today at 4:30 p.m. So, you know, it gets it pretty early. We're there early. And, you know, we start setting up behind the scenes. I'll get down to the field. I'll check things out. And then from there, you know, every once in a while, another bus comes in and starts rolling in with the players. And you've seen those pictures and the guys coming in at some point. So, yeah, today at 4:30, I'll be over at the stadium. And then obviously that'll be during Show Up in the Bulldog. And we'll have all your, you know, pregame coverage and roundtable and all that kind of stuff going on. But it is very structured on what they do, you know, here during the day, and everything is, you know, hey, at this time here, here's the walkthrough, here's your treatments available, here's lunch, all those kinds of things.
So, Sal, another storyline for tonight, Jordan Poyer's first time playing the Bills in 10 years. I mean, the last 7 years he was on the Bills. The last time he played against them was with Cleveland back in 2014. What do you think the vibe is around that? How are the guys going to, you know, what's it going to be like on the field? You know, obviously, you know, after the game, handshakes and hugs and all that, but in game, I wonder what the, you know, the feeling is going to be between the two sides.
Well, I think it'll be a lot before the game too, where you'll see him, and, you know, I'm excited to say hi to Jordan as well, just because, you know, he meant so much to the Bills and got to know him very well. And, you know, you see those guys coming out for early pregame warm-up sets when you say hello, catch up, how's the family, you know, good to see you, all those kinds of things. And he'll do that with a lot of the players. He'll do that with a lot of the, you know, the staff members that he sees. And that's going to be, I think, to me, more of the kind of the feelings and the vibes. Once the game gets kicked off, guys, I don't think there's much of that at all. I just think that it's a team with the other opponent, right? The other uniform on. And, you know, I don't think Jordan Poyer is thinking, you know, it's the Buffalo Bills. What can happen though is Obviously, he may see something he knows or recognizes from a Bills offense that he practiced against for 7 years. You know, Josh Allen, the way he operates. You know, that's something that he'll probably be on the lookout for. But I don't think the feeling of playing the Bills, you know, will creep into Jordan. I mean, he's used to playing against a Buffalo Bills helmet for the last 7 years anyway in practice every day, right? So I don't think that's the case. And then sure enough, you know, on the other side, you know, the Bills – you know, it'll be the same for them. You know, they're going against another player, another opponent. It's not the first player they've ever gone against that, you know, moved on and went to another team. So I think during the game, those things subside. Nobody really thinks about it in that way. And then after the game, obviously, that's when you get back together again. You know, you say good job and stay healthy and, you know, see you back on, what, November 3rd. It'll be again when they play.
All right, Sal. Enjoy the rest of your day. Enjoy the game. We'll talk again soon.
Okay, guys, have a great show. Thanks.
That was Sal Capaccio down in South Florida getting ready for tonight's game against the Miami Dolphins. We are looking for your predictions, 803-0550, the number to call. You can also tweet in to WGR or myself and Josh Schmidt. Very excited for tonight. The Jordan Poyer angle, Josh, I find myself never thinking about it.
Leading up to asking Sal that question, I was like, man, when was the last time? Because he would have played against the Bills before, but then in 2016 – when he was with Cleveland, his last year in Cleveland, mm-hmm. the whole back half of the season, he's on injured reserve. And then, there goes the page. In 2015, they didn't play the Bills.
Yep.
So 2014, week 12,
mm-hmm.
they played in Buffalo. Buffalo won 26-10. Poyer didn't really do anything in that game. But still, that's the last time he played against the Buffalo Bills. 10 years ago. That's kind of crazy, isn't it? Like, it's just wild.
I mean,
that's also,
it
shows his longevity in the NFL.
Yeah, and I mean, he has been a part of the Bills for a majority of his career.
Right. 7 years.
I don't love that he's gone to a rival. It is what it is.
Yeah, well.
But, yeah, I haven't thought too much on that angle. I think a lot of it, though, too, is when he went there, it was sort of this feeling of, I mean, how much does he honestly have left?
Mm-hmm.
I think right. that's an honest question of, does he have a ton?
There was a good bit of training camp where he wasn't practicing too, or was limited in practice.
The early parts, yeah.
Yeah. And that kind of also gave you a little bit of a what's going to happen here.
Mm-hmm.
But I mean, he played last week. I don't think he really did. He had 3 solo tackles, 6 combined tackles, and,
yeah.
you know, just kind of a run of the mill day.
Yeah, I don't really know if I saw anything. Yeah, it wasn't like the Trey White play against the Lions where you're like, oh no, with Jamison Williams. There wasn't anything like that.
Right. Yeah, that was tough to watch too.
Yeah,
you got
to
feel for Trey White there. I mean, is that age? Is that Jamison Williams being fast? You know, there's a lot of different
factors. I think Jamison Williams
there.
Is going to be a very good wide receiver now that he's kind of figured out everything in his personal life and on the field as well.
Right.
But I said it on a nightcap last night. I'm finding myself having a tough time. I get excited for the games. I love the rivalry. I've mentioned that a lot. Us growing up, like, it was not Bills Dolphins. Both teams were bad.
Yeah, but
and they
even
didn't really
then,
stand in each other's way. And it was more, you know, we hate the Patriots because they beat us up. And even, you know, as I've gotten older, I've kind of moved away from that because it was like the Bills were bad on their own. Like, the Patriots weren't keeping them out of the playoffs. I think outside of maybe a year where beating the Patriots once or twice would have gotten you in the playoffs. And the Jets, I've never really felt any, I don't want to say hatred towards the Jets.
It's just an annoyance, really.
That's really the only feeling.
Yeah, it's never been like, oh my, I don't want to play you. Not that I don't want to play.
No.
I don't want to see you win. With the Jets, it's just, guys, just stop.
Last year, week
you play
was
in New Jersey. You're not in New York. You drafted a bad quarterback and you signed an old quarterback. You're not good.
Last year, week one was the first time I felt like anything like really negative with the Jets in terms of a Bills fan thinking about
that
the Jets.
That was also just frustration, I feel like, because it was a frustrating game. How did you just lose? Aaron Rodgers gets hurt and you have to play Zach Wilson and you lose on a punt return touchdown in overtime. Like that was why everyone was so mad that game, I feel like. It wasn't this is a long storied rivalry and you never want to lose to them. This has become that though.
That's the thing is for the older generation, it's kind of always been that.
Right. Yeah.
Where for now a lot of Bills fans who are our age, it's like, oh no, now it's here. Now I understand whenever I go over to Thanksgiving dinner and my uncle and my dad are talking about squish the fish. I hate the Dolphins, the whole thing, and I'm sitting there going, all right, guys, like the 90s were a while ago. It's like, no, it wasn't just the 90s. It was a lot of, if not the entire history of the Bills. And now I think last year as well, you had great games against the Dolphins that sort of set up even more to what the rivalry is. Of course, last year, coming off of their 70 points scored against the Broncos, they come to Buffalo, they lose 48-20.
I was watching those highlights this morning on YouTube, just gathering some clips for the show and stuff, and I just forgot how dominant that game was.
Yeah.
I mean, the Diggs touchdown where he spins away from two guys, the Allen rushing touchdown where, I mean, he had a decent amount of space to cover. Yeah. It wasn't like you're on the 2-yard line and you push it in. And, you know, that whole game was just fantastic. And then even last year at the end of the season,
to clinch the end of the season.
Yeah. The Trent Sherfield crazy catch where he holds onto the line and grabs the ball, his only touchdown
Hardy
as a Bill.
Kick return touchdown. I mean,
and a punt return touchdown. Or, I'm sorry, just the punt.
It was the punt return touchdown. Yeah, yeah, but it's. And for it to be the final game of the
year.
To
win the AFC East.
To win the AFC East.
After everything that was last year with, you know, you
the
go
rivalry,
from...
The rivalry for us younger people has now become a real thing.
Yep.
And that's why I partially do enjoy that the Dolphins are a good team. It keeps the rivalry fresh. I think rivalries die when one of the teams is just not good.
Well, and I feel like, you know, obviously this rivalry was born way before we were, but it was back when the Dolphins would beat the Bills every time they played.
And the eventual streak breaking.
Yeah, And I think that's like the one time where you have a rivalry born out of one team being bad and the other team being good.
Mm-hmm.
And because, like you said, most of the time it's two teams competing for the ultimate prize, and you get frustrated when you lose to them because it's, man, there it goes. You know, you're not going to win it now. You're not going to win the division. You're not going to make it to the playoffs, whatever. But this was one of the rivalries that was born out of just pure, why do they keep beating us? Why do we keep losing to them? Why does this keep happening? And then it was finally, oh, you break the streak. And then, boom, both teams kind of get good at the same time in the 80s and 90s. And that's really where I think it ramped up. Was when the Bills actually got good after they broke the streak, and you know it's a very interesting history. I think it's a lot better than the history with the Patriots.
You know, it is interesting though too for the Dolphins to basically own the decade of the 70s, the all time series. So this includes playoff meetings. Dolphins only lead at 62-58, and there's also a tie in there one, but we're not
closing in. Four more wins.
But, like, that's I think that's really kind of cool that even after a complete domination of the 70s, right?
Yeah.
You're still looking at it going, it's getting close.
Right. And again, you look at the last, you know, this Josh Allen era.
Mm-hmm.
Let's put it that way. He's 11-2 counting playoff wins. He's 10-2 without the playoff because they've only played once in the playoffs.
In this recent run, yeah.
In the Allen era, yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. But 11-2, like that's an impressive run.
Yeah.
Right? And I mean, granted, the first loss is in a game where, you know, you should have won because Charles Clay dropped the ball.
Mm-hmm.
But the second one was because all your players are dying on the sideline. You know, there's heat stroke everywhere and not actually heat stroke, you know what I mean. Mm-hmm. It was 1,000 degrees on the Bills sideline and it did not go well, but and I'm not trying to make excuses there, but had those two games, had the heat stroke game been in Buffalo?
Oh yeah, I mean,
I think it's flipped. You know, I think it's 12-1.
And that's the thing in the 2020s, that is their lone win,
right?
Is that 21-19 game in 2022?
And it's not even a big win; it's a 3-point win
in week 2-3.
Yeah, I mean, and even the one where. Allen's first loss in his first game against the Dolphins. It was 21-17. It's not like you're getting destroyed.
Oh, that game bothers me.
Like, you look at the other wins from the Bills. 42, 31, 37, 28, 31, 56. 35-0, 26. Like, you're not slacking against them, and even in the losses you're at least scoring two touchdowns. It's I stood by it last year and I'll stand by it again. I'm not scared of them until they win the division. I'm really not, and I don't think they're going to do it this year.
No, I think their defense is weaker.
Yeah.
Listening to Armando Salguero yesterday with Shelton Bulldog, I mean, I thought that going to the offseason, he said it outright. I don't think they're a much better unit. I understand the fear of Jalen Phillips, but I think really their kind of stud on the defense that was one of the few guys to give the Bills fits was Christian Wilkins. He is not on the team anymore.
He's in Las Vegas still causing problems because he was part of the reason why the Raiders and the Chargers fought last week. So he's still causing problems.
Tyreek Hill, I think, is always a danger, but the Bills do a very, very good job of limiting the number one wide receiver on really any team. They're one of the best teams in the NFL to do so. And the Dolphins, I think, need to prove to themselves, they need to prove to Buffalo, they need to prove to their fans, they need to prove to Bills fans that, like, they can actually stand up and fight.
Yeah.
Because it typically is, there's a little bit of hype, both teams look good. Again, Miami comes off a 70-point performance and then are blown out.
Yeah.
They don't even put up 30 points, and it's never really a contest. You also have the playoff loss, which, you know, you can argue at Skylar Thompson, not Tua Tagovailoa. But then in the next season, which is 2023, it's the 48-20 game, and then the Bills beating you at home when it's, you know, for the division. This is the moment where you could take it from Buffalo. And then as well, Miami has proven to be multiple times over that they can beat up on bad teams, but they play a team that's over 500, home or away. They are simply not the same team. And to that point as well, Buffalo has shown to be one of the best, if not the best, when coming to play the Dolphins. They screw up Tua better than anybody. They know how to get him off his
even
first
if
read
they don't sack
and
him.
End him. Yeah.
Even if they're not, you know, getting to the quarterback,
constantly.
They're throwing off his timing. They're throwing off his reads. And it's a different defense this year. But I think if you want to look at it, the Dolphins' defense kind of looks more like the Bills' defense last year. Not just because Jordan Poyer's on it, but because you have, you have a great linebacker in Jalen Phillips. Okay, Matt Milano.
Yeah.
And then you have a great or former great cornerback in Jalen Ramsey, Tre'Davious White.
Mm-hmm.
Because and that's no knock on Tre'Davious White or Jalen Ramsey, but they both have shown last year with Tre'Davious White, and even now this year, unfortunately, and last year with Jalen Ramsey, they both have shown they can't stay healthy, and they used to be good.
Yep.
And it's just looking at all that stuff, I don't really fear their defense. Their offense, I will respect because Mike McDaniel is very good.
Yes,
he is a very good offensive mind. But until Tua can consistently perform. And yes, he had a great year last year. Don't get me wrong.
Led the league in passing yards.
He led the league in passing yards. But it's, like you put it, it's always against teams that are losing teams or in situations that it just doesn't matter.
I mean, it's Dak Prescott in his early years where all of his stats came against the four games against Washington and the Giants.
Right. Yeah.
And that was early parts of his career. After that, it was always kind of like, his stats would be okay. You put him in primetime, not good. And Dallas was that kind of version last year where against anybody that was above 500, they were terrible. The Dolphins and Tua kind of to this point as well are sort of that same thing. Look, they had a very good win to open up last year against the Chargers. He had almost 500 yards passing, 3 touchdowns. Against New England, though, a good defense. He's under 250 yards. Against the Denver Broncos, we know how that game went. Against Buffalo later, it's a lot of we're behind, and he's still under 300 yards. Then you also get games against Kansas City in Germany. He's under 200 yards passing. Against Philadelphia, he's under 220 yards passing.
Well, and look at last week, too, right? So,
and also the final Bills game. He's under 200 yards passing.
Last week against the Jaguars in their opening game, they win. It's a comeback win just like the Bills. Basically the same scenario. I mean, you're down 17-3 and you come back and you win. Obviously, final scores are different, but still. Tua had 338 passing yards and 1 touchdown. 23 for 37. That looks like a pretty good day.
80 of them came on one play.
Right. Yeah.
I will also
if you take away that one Tyreek Hill play, if Travis Etienne doesn't fumble the football on the 1 yard line, Tua has most likely under 300 passing yards.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, that, well.
Which is fine.
There was a whole quarter left, so maybe we'll give him a little bit there. Maybe he would have gotten over 300.
For me, though, it's more the yards are fun and nice, but you put up 20 points.
Right.
You know, and I know McDermott said this with Sal yesterday. We heard it right here on the Extra Point Show. It's just like it matters more to have points than yards against the Dolphins. Like, that's you need to score touchdowns against these guys. They score fast.
And however you can, too. It doesn't matter if it's special teams, defense, or offense.
I will also say the comeback is nice. I think it's far less impressive than what the Bills did. And I don't want to, like, you know, totally compare comebacks. It's good that you got wins. Good teams find a way to win games where bad teams crumble. I get it. But the Bills, by like the first drive of the second half, were tied 17-17.
Yeah, and you kind of
very quickly that game all of a sudden flipped on its head.
And
the Dolphins
were
late in the third, potentially going to go down 24-7 if not for a great play by their defense to force a fumble on the goal line. And then they're able to start getting it going.
Well,
the Bills are a kick return touchdown away from being up 11 going into the fourth quarter.
They didn't even really get it going in the fourth quarter.
Mm-hmm.
They get the one play 80-yard touchdown to Tyreek Hill to make it 17-14. They were losing still. Jaguars get the ball back. It's a turnover on downs. That's really weird. Okay.
Okay.
That's strange. And then they send out the offense, can't get it done. Jason Sanders goes to kick a field goal, 42 yards, misses it.
Mm-hmm.
Jaguars get the ball back, punt. Dolphins get the ball back, field goal to tie it.
Yep.
So again, it's not like their offense is clicking in the fourth quarter, coming to life and doing all this stuff. They had to rely on a last second field goal from Jason Sanders, who had missed one earlier.
Yeah, 52 yarder.
He had missed a 42-yard and makes a 52 at the end of the game to win it. But again, like you were saying, it's if you want to compare them, it's not the same game. It's not the same type of comeback. It's this let's hobble to the finish and rely on our kicker who's already missed once today.
Yeah. 803-0550, the number to call. We're also looking at your tweets as well. What are some of your predictions heading into tonight at 8:15 kickoff? It will be on Amazon Prime. But for here locally in Buffalo, we'll be on ABC. And, of course, we'll have the game on WGR with Chris Brown, Eric Wood, and Sal Capaccio on the call from the Northwest Bank broadcast booth. We'll be right back after a quick timeout. This is the Northtown Automotive Extra Point Show on WGR.
It's about points, not yards, and then taking care of the football. When you look at the games that we've played, the first game last season, we were able to take the ball away and score touchdowns rather than field goals. And in the second game, the last game of the regular season last year, we had yards, but not as many points, you know, through touchdowns and whatnot. So it's points over yards and making sure we take care of the ball.
Buffalo Bills head coach Sean McDermott. That was yesterday with our own Sal Capaccio. And yeah, I mean, that's what we're talking about. And that's where the Bills are at, where it means more to get points over yards for them. I mean, they had over 400 yards last week against the Jaguars and got 20 points out of it. The Bills were able to put up 34 on the board, and they had a bad turnover near or in the red zone and on the first drive.
Oh, Allen's fumble. Yeah, no, that was...
I mean, they were well on their way to putting
like
up
37. I'm going to say the 37 yard line.
37.
The Cardinals line? 37.
Regardless, they were very close to the red zone.
I'm looking at it now.
Oh, okay, they were humming, and it was a good game for the Bills' offense. You know, yeah, obviously they put up 34 points, but they were struggling in the first half, and then just opened up.
So close.
Where is it?
29.
I was even closer. Yeah, I was.
You were close.
Yeah, if not, yeah, all right. But I mean, they were very close to open up the floodgates against Arizona, and it was just a bad. It was basically the defense couldn't get off the field in the first half, and a bad turnover that ultimately stopped that from being, you know, over 40 points scored. It was a really good offensive game for the Bills.
To be fair, too, I mean, the Bills' fumble was it's obviously not great, but it only led to a field goal. It's not like it led to a touchdown.
No, exactly.
And I'm not saying like, oh, like it's fine. You can fumble. No, but it's better to. Be able to have
a solid rally.
Yeah, it's better to have the defense like limit those points there. Obviously, you don't want the fumble at all, but in a perfect world, if that does happen, the field goal is kind of it's the second best option. I mean, the best option is to get the ball back again.
No, of course.
You know, it's obviously something that they probably have or they're going to clean up, but you know,
yeah.
it's not something that I feel like tends to happen for Allen against the Dolphins.
I know he plays his best games against Miami pretty much year in and year out. Zach Jones, Josh Schmidt here on the Northtown Automotive Extra Point Show, brought to you by Northtown Automotive. Whatever you're looking for, you'll find it at Northtown. Shop online at northtownauto.com. Are looking for your calls on predictions for tonight. It is an 8:15 kickoff over on Amazon Prime. Locally, though, it'll be on Channel 7 and, of course, right here on WGR. But let's get connected to our fans, brought to you by Northtown Kia. Shop online at northtownkia.com. Alex tweets in, high-scoring Bills win. I would also imagine it's a high-scoring game. Again, I've mentioned I don't really respect much of the Dolphins' defense. I am somebody that does like what the Bills' offense is looking like, especially when looking back at the All-22 tape. The Bills were able to move the ball because when they would zero, when Arizona would zero in on Dalton Kincaid, we've laughed at the one image of like four defenders circling Kincaid and then Ray Davis is wide open for a 14-15 yard gain. I think that is going to continue. Yes, they have Jalen Ramsey. I don't really know how much of Jalen Ramsey is that guy, like the Rams guy and the Jaguars guy. I don't really know how much there. And even then, it's one dude. After that, I don't really know. You know, who else is going to be necessarily a game wrecker? I am a big Khalil Shakir fan. Josh, I think you took his over on receptions tonight.
Mm-hmm. Three and a half.
We're thinking.
Hoping for. Yeah.
I also think Kincaid is probably going to have a much bigger role in terms of the outright offense rather than just, I don't want to say he became a decoy, but he kind of did become a bit of a decoy as the game went on just because it seemed like Arizona was really keying in on him. Keon Coleman as well. You saw in his first game action lead the team in targets and catches. Yeah. I think that is a great sign going forward. And then, of course, you have the run game, Allen himself, James Cook, Ray Davis, and Ty Johnson. James Cook in the first half last week, or the run game in the first half last week, over 7 yards per carry. It did dip in the second half.
If we're looking at last week's game, mm-hmm. how different is the Cardinals defense to the Dolphins defense? Realistically, I'm not trying to be funny here.
I think the Dolphins have a better pass rush.
Yeah, but I mean, Cardinals do have Buda Baker.
Well, and it's the thing is, I think like they have a great safety in Buda Baker.
Mm-hmm. That is true. Yeah, safety compared to linebacker, but
I think the Dolphins have a better pass rush. But I think both are very weak. I think both can be had. You mm-hmm. saw that with Arizona.
Yeah.
And I think you can see the same thing tonight. I'd be very surprised if Buffalo only put up like 20, 21 points. I really would. Because, number one, Allen typically does have great games against them. I think the wide receiver room is significantly better than it was last year, even without having Stephon Diggs, because they have just more options. You saw it last week. 9 guys caught passes. 10 guys were targeted.
I was about to say, 10 guys. Yeah, it's crazy.
And so
that's like, it's what they said they wanted all offseason.
And it seems like Allen spreads the ball around more willingly against the Dolphins as well. Mm-hmm. He throws the ball a lot. He puts up a lot of yards, puts up a lot of touchdowns. And he does that willingly against the Dolphins. Now, all of a sudden, you have a crop of guys. We don't even mention Dawson Knox enough in this as well, who had like a very nice catch early in the game on Sunday. You add him into this element of what they've got going on. Curtis Samuel, another few days healthier from his turf toe. He didn't get to play a ton. But on Allen's fumble, he is wide open in the middle of the field. So I would imagine that is something that when they're looking at film going, dude, just he's right in the middle of the field. Just hit him. And I'd be very, very, very surprised if Buffalo only puts up 21 points in this game. They always play well against the Dolphins. And you saw at the end of last year, and this is more my biggest issue, is that it did get to a point where they just were not getting anything from Sherfield and Hardy. It was all Diggs and maybe Shakir at that point, maybe Kincaid, the run game. It was very, very ugly how they were winning a lot of these games. And they were winning them, but it was ugly. It was not really how they wanted to do it.
But then looking at, you know, what they got last week out of all of the people they passed the ball to, that's something you haven't ever had, mm-hmm. really. I mean, even going back to the John Brown, Cole Beasley days, you haven't had that many options being able to get double-digit yardage.
2020 is the year. It's Diggs' first year, Cole Beasley's breakout, right. And John Brown is that number two. That's the best year they've had in terms of passing weapons.
But, I mean, you look at it, every single player who caught a ball had double-digit yardage.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, 11 yards for Kincaid, sure, but 51 yards for Keon Coleman, 42 for Khalil Shakir. It's not these big flashy plays, but that is what they talked about all training camp,
mm-hmm.
is having the ability to just get down the field and move the ball.
It also it also seems to be the nature of where the league is going right now, which is, again, like, teams will not let you beat them over the top. You have to move down the field methodically. You have to be able to put together long sustaining drives with the run game, with the passing game as well. And the Bills have now gone to, and now, and this is the thing too, the Bills haven't totally gone away from taking deep shots. They had one to Marquez Valdes-Scantling that was just out of reach, and Keon Coleman comes down with a 50-50 ball. They still have that element in their game. It's just more, I think the first pitch they have, the fastball they have, is going to be just ba-boom, 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 ba-boom. You know, take what the defense is giving you, and you have an elite quarterback in Allen that is able to do so. All you need now with an elite quarterback is having guys that get open and catch the ball. You don't necessarily need the number one wide receiver. You just have to have a complement of guys who, again, get open and catch the ball. That's the biggest problem with Kansas City the last few years, is that they had guys that got open. They also had guys that dropped the ball, I think, at the top end of the NFL. And that was a huge problem. Where Buffalo last year, I don't think they had guys that were getting open. And I think that was a huge issue. They were just running into constant problems of sitting there, having everyone go deep in the beginning of the year with Ken Dorsey, and then no one's getting open except maybe Stephon Diggs. But if he's doubled up, or just, again, not getting open, it happens, it's fine. There's just no second option other than Allen to be Superman. Me and Sal talked about this a few days ago. You know, neither of us really saw that Allen necessarily had to be Superman. It's just that he is that guy. That's the kind of player he is. But a lot of his throws were just, he's open. I'm just going to, again, the Ray Davis play is just quickly, all right, and that's 15 yards. You know, the Keon Cole, or the Kincaid one for like 11 yards. First down. It's just first downs, first downs, first downs. And that's the key to winning the NFL. College football is more, you put up 75 points, baby. You go for the end zone all the time. The NFL is much more get first downs, sustain drives, and score points. College is much closer to just go score points, if that kind of makes sense. Let's go to the phones here. We've got Jeff on the line. Jeff, good morning. How are we doing today?
Hey, good morning, guys. Hey, I just wanted to bring up something, you know, last week, to be in the first game of Hyde and Poyer being back there. The Bills used to do a lot of disguising, and those guys being the veterans and stuff like that, sort of like, you know, could disguise plays and what coverages you're actually going to see when the ball is snapped. But last week against the Cardinals, the Bills pretty much played it straightforward. What you saw was what you got. I mean, they did make some adjustment in the second half, but do you guys see that? And do you see like a team with a Tyreek and a Waddle and so on and so forth? I mean, I know these teams know each other, but again, when it comes to disguising coverages, they were the key to that. And like I said, the Bills were playing it pretty vanilla. If I can make one more point, not a knock on Deion or Dawkins, but a good tackle, but I feel he's pretty overrated nationally. I know he's a good guy in the community and everything, but for a left tackle, I don't even know if he's top 10.
Yeah, I, Jeff, I don't really know about that one. I mean, 2020, he had a rough year due to COVID. I mean, he got the disease, had a really tough time. After that, he's been one of the better left tackles in football. Top 10, I think, pretty easily. Yeah. I wouldn't put him at like 2 or 3. I don't really think even the national media would do that anyways. I mean, he's a
pro. The top 10 is completely fair.
Pro Bowl left tackle. Yeah. He's Service Bowl. There's not really that many great offensive linemen. I know that's a surprise to some, but there's really not that many great offensive linemen in football. When you have them, they don't leave. They just don't. Great offensive linemen very rarely hit the open market. It's a big reason why the Bills also, for an ascending player who's only had one good year in Spencer Brown, it's why they paid him 4 years, $72 million. It was, we can't let him go. I guarantee you Osiris Torrance, if he continues to progress as he has, which week one, not great for him.
No,
but if
hey,
he continues to progress in 2 years, they will pay him as well, because it's just, it's so, so difficult to find great offensive linemen.
With Deion too, I mean, I don't get that. I think that he's been there. Yes, he had his issues at first, but the past 2 years, he's been part of the reason why Allen has been able
his
to
his best
so
year
much
was
time.
Last year.
Yeah. Yeah.
And it was a very, very good, if not great year.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't really understand that one. I think there's this feeling of he needs to be like a Hall of Fame left tackle, and Deion probably at this point doesn't have that resume, probably never will. But yeah, I put him up there as one of the top 10 left tackles in football, I think, quite easily. I think he's probably 7-8-ish in that area and quite comfortably. On the safety thing, though, I think it's going to go more towards the second half. That defense could not get off the field in the first half. They made the adjustments, and then it became an entirely different game towards the end of the first half and all of the second half, really. I mean, again, the only real reason Arizona was in the game was a special teams touchdown, which that has to get shored up, but that's also a new element to the game. You know, we're seeing how those kick returns are going to be used. That was a new element. It was the only one of the weekend, right? For a kick return touchdown, I believe that was the only one.
Yeah,
of the weekend.
It was the first official dynamic kickoff touchdown too. Because, I mean, I think there was one in the preseason, there wasn't one in the preseason.
Yes, yeah, so that was the first one.
Yeah, that was the first one.
That's going to be an element they've got to shore up. But I mean, like, they shut the game down and were on their way to winning by 14. And just completely, you know, shutting the door on the game with the fourth quarter going on. But yeah, they'll probably go more towards this guy's coverages. They have veteran players at the safety position. That's a big reason why they pushed for that, and why Cole Bishop was not immediately thrust into the starting lineup the moment he got healthy. And even then, you know, to start the preseason or to start training camp, it was more, we're going to take our time here. This is going to be kind of like fine wine. We're going to let, you know, him marinate and mature and the whole thing. That was a big part of it, because for playing safety for the Bills is a mental game more than almost anything, which playing the safety position oftentimes is a mental game more than anything. That's why they have Mike Edwards. It's why DeMar Hamlin has become such a key player for them, being a part of the defense for, you know, 4 years now at this point, 4 or 5 years at this point. It's why it's a big thing, you know, for them, is you need to be able to run the defense successfully. I'm more interested in the linebackers. I thought Terrell Bernard kind of had a shaky game at times. Dorian Williams had a shaky game against Arizona. Again, cheered it up, but there were moments not great. I'm more interested in them going forward. I also think the defensive line, though, for the Bills is going to be maybe the key factor for this game and where it's going to go, because if you can get Tua off his rhythm early and off his first read quickly, that is an entirely different offensive scheme. 803-0550, the number to call. We're also going to keep reading your tweets as well. Zach Jones and Josh Schmidt, you're here on the Northtown Automotive Extra Point Show, and this is WGR. Welcome back, everyone. Zach Jones and Josh Schmidt here on the Northtown Automotive Extra Point Show. Listening to WGR. It is game day for the Buffalo Bills. They take on the Miami Dolphins down in South Florida for an 8:15 kickoff. They begin week two of the 2024 NFL season. Very, very excited for tonight. Effectively, this is pregame, right? I mean, pregame officially starts here on WGR at 3 p.m. with Shelton Bulldog. But let's be honest.
It feels like
it was pregame at 6 a.m. with Jeremy and Joe. It's an all-day adventure.
Right. I mean, if you think about it, too, that's kind of how a normal Sunday would go. I mean, it starts at 7 with Breakfast with the Bills, and it goes till 1, so that's quick math. How many hours?
This is not good. You're not good at quick math. Why would you do that?
How many hours is it?
Why would you do that?
How many hours is it?
I don't know.
If you're so good at quick math.
I'm not.
At kickoff, it would be 6 hours.
There we go. That's what I thought. But I didn't want to just spew out 6.
That's why I don't do math.
I mean, I was just looking at the clock going from 8 to 7 to 9.
But it just feels like it, right? Like,
oh, yeah.
Even though it's not going to be the normal amount of time, it just, everyone's just waiting all day for Thursday night.
Yeah, that's good.
Thanks.
Real quick, though, I do want to bring this up here before we take our next time out, because I don't really know where else we're going to fit it in, but I have to, because as a college football junkie, this is the best news I've heard last night. And then to get it officially this morning at 9 a.m. our time, 6 a.m. Pacific, Pac-12's not dead yet, baby!
You know, they should become...
They're just rebranding.
Make it the Pac half.
No, don't do that.
No,
do that.
Right now, make it the Pac half, because you have 6 of 12 teams. Just do that until you get to 12. Pac half.
If you have not heard the news, the Pac-12 officially announced today that they are adding in 4 members to their remaining 2. I think people do forget that the Pac-12 is actually still technically a thing with Oregon State and Washington State. They did not get invited to any of the Big 12, ACC,
which
Big 10. Which is sad. But they were like, nah, screw it. We're going to rebuild together.
We don't need you.
We don't need you. And so
I feel like they're going to go for the Mountain West.
That's what they're doing.
That's exactly what they're doing.
Officially, as of today, starting in the 2026 year, they will be joined by Boise State, Colorado State, Fresno State, and San Diego State. That is as of right now. We'll see if they're able to add anyone else in. They're going to have a 2-year grace period to kind of have these guys all pay their essentially their dues to get into the conference and then to kind of
juggle everything.
They're gutting it, and that's fine. Because you know what the Mountain West should do? Bring in FCS programs who have been too dominant for too long. North Dakota State, South Dakota State, Montana, Montana State. You're in. Coach is calling you up.
Yeah, but what are the other six you're going to put in the Pac-12? You're just going to keep...
I don't know. I don't. Exactly. That's not my job. I'm not out there. UNLV. You actually really should do UNLV.
Wyoming? I think Hawaii.
Nah, Wyoming's not a big enough market. Hawaii's getting left behind.
No. Hawaii should absolutely Hawaii go to the Pac-12. Hawaii's in the Pacific.
They're getting left behind. I would almost...
What conference are they even in, Hawaii?
Mountain West.
Technically
Mountain
really?
West.
Really?
Yeah. Which is just
for football. They're in the Big West, then for basketball. It's a whole
thing.
It's
so stupid. Just put them in the Pac-12. They're in the Pacific Ocean.
Nah, baby. They're getting left behind. They're going straight to the FCS level. I would put money on that. They are going to get dropped down to the FCS level. They're going to go the avenue of Idaho.
Introduce a relegation and promotion.
We're not doing that.
Come on. Why not? People would love that. Come on. Think about it.
Sure. Sure.
What do you mean, sure?
You're
a soccer fan. You love the promotion relegation thing.
Yeah, but that's because it was built into the game. You can't introduce it, 200 years
nonsense.
Into a sport.
Nonsense.
You can't
it's
do
not
it.
200 years into football. What are you talking about?
You can't do it.
Oh, maybe it is 200 years.
You can't do it.
But no, it's not 200 years. What are you talking about?
What I'm more excited for, though, the idea that Cal and Stanford are starting ACC play, and Stanford's going to have to deal with the war machine that is Syracuse to open up ACC play. They're going to run back to the Pac-12. When all said and done. Zach Jones and Josh Mate here for another hour. Still taking your calls on predictions for tonight. 803-0550, the number to call. We'll be right back. This is WGR.
You're listening to the Northtown Automotive Extra Point Show with Zach and Josh. Brought to you by Northtown Automotive. Whatever you're looking for, you'll find it at Northtown. Shop online at northtownauto.com.
Welcome back, everyone. Zach Jones and Josh Schmidt here on the Northtown Automotive Extra Point Show, brought to you by Northtown Automotive. Whatever you're looking for, you'll find it at Northtown. Shop online at northtownauto.com. Taking your calls and reading your tweets on your predictions for tonight's game as the Bills will travel down or have traveled down to Miami to take on the Miami Dolphins. An 8:15 kickoff. That's going to be on Amazon Prime for those not locally in Buffalo, and that does include Rochester, sadly. However, the game here in Buffalo will be on Channel 7. And, of course, you can also listen to it right here on WGR. Our pregame coverage officially will begin at 3 p.m. with Schopen and the Bulldog and then go all the way to kickoff at 8:15. Where then Chris Brown, Eric Wood, and Sal Capaccio will take the baton as they call the game from the Northwest Bank broadcast booth. But we go back to the phones now. We've got Greg on the line. Greg, good morning. How are we doing today?
Doing great. How about yourself, guys?
Doing very well.
Doing good.
Hey, I find it very interesting after this first game that no one's talking more about our defensive tackles. Ed Oliver did not hear his name called once, and he was a zero on the stat sheet for the day. I thought this guy's supposed to be one of our studs now.
Yeah, no, Greg, I totally get your point there. Thanks for the call. I think a lot of that... Bless you, Josh. I think a lot of that, though, was Arizona's game plan. Do not go towards the middle of the middle of the defense.
And also, too, I mean, like Greg brought up there, I was looking at the stat sheet. He's not there anywhere. But you know who is? Greg Rousseau. I mean, that's the thing. With this Bills defensive line, you have so many different people being able to just wreck a game that – it's okay if Ed Oliver doesn't have a good game. It's okay if he gets shut down and game planned against. You still have Greg Rousseau. You still have Von Miller now.
Well,
Von Miller gets first sack in 2 years last game.
Yep.
Granted, it was not the sack we're used
think
to.
I think a lot of that, though, was a game plan by Arizona of stick to the edges, do not go up the middle of the field.
Yeah. Look at all the run
Oliver,
plays.
Oliver is a game wrecker.
Yeah.
And that's what they were doing. And they did it quite well. The difference was, though, is this year, I brought it up, Rousseau has now over half of his sack production from last year in a single game. He had 5 sacks last year. He's at 3 now.
Which
Miller, as you brought up, has not had a sack in 2 years. He has one already.
That's just wild from Greg Rousseau, by the way.
And I get it. Sack production is not everything.
Awesome, but that's, I mean, if you're an edge rusher, that's kind of your thing.
Yeah, that's really what you want.
It's what you want to be able to do. But, I mean, think about all of the offensive runs that Arizona had. I'm willing to bet, and I don't know where I could find this, but I'm willing to bet that every single one of them was to the outside. Mm-hmm. There was never a run up the middle. There was never a run kind of inside. It was always all the way outside. You know, it's, and I mean, again, like you said, that's the game plan when you're facing a guy like Ed Oliver.
Mm-hmm.
If you want to neutralize him from the game, you don't run the ball towards him. And when you are passing, then you double block him and you just take mm-hmm. him out of the equation. Right?
They did it. I mean, they did a pretty good job of it.
But now looking at tonight, I feel like the Dolphins have been a team that hasn't been able to lock up an Ed Oliver.
No,
over the years.
Well, number one, their offensive line is not good. But I think also now, I mean, yeah, after one game, and it's a 4-day period until you play the next game, but they're going to have to look at Rousseau, who just won AFC Defensive Player of the Week, and go, you can't let him go. I think a lot of it as well. Tua is not Kyler Murray. He is not escaping from the pocket. That was also a big issue. The containment was an issue in the first half, and Murray was able to run for first downs. Tua's not going to be that guy.
No.
And so that is going to be a big thing for them of you cannot let Rousseau wreck this game. Age Epinesa also has one of his – doesn't have a ton of sacks, but one of his famous ones is against Tua Tagovailoa and knocking him out of the game. I mean, that is going to be a key for Miami to even stay in this contest is you need to keep Tua upright and you need to get to that first read quickly. And the Bills are good at getting rid of that first read, and they're also very good at getting to Tua. And if they've got Greg, Vaughn, AJ, and Ed coming after him, and it is actually a very good defensive line, which it had all the potential to be, that is going to be massive for them going forward. I mean, massive for them. And for Miami, it's going to be a long day.
Ed Oliver in his career against Miami has 4 sacks.
As a defensive tackle, is pretty good.
Yeah. He also has no interceptions or anything like that.
Defensive tackle.
Well, right. No. I know, but he does. I think he has a few, right? Or no, he's got a couple fumble recoveries.
Oh, okay.
But still, 4 sacks. That's
defensive tackle is pretty good.
Not bad. Yeah, and I think that again, like you were saying, with Greg Rousseau being the defensive player of the week from last week, that's going to be the focus for. I feel like it's got to be the focus for Miami's offense. If you're trying to keep Tua upright,
it's looking at that guy and going, all right, he caused a lot of problems.
And again,
don't let him do that again.
And it's the 1-2 punch that we were hoping for in the first year with mm-hmm. Vaughn. If Vaughn Miller can come in and continue this progression forward like he appeared to do last week, then you're sitting really good, and that's before he even throws the ball.
Yeah.
Right? And I still think that, the linebackers have some stuff to clean up, but
yeah, and we did just have a tweet come in, kind of confirming this. Arizona's game plan was to attack the edges. Ed was combo blocked all game long. As long as someone eats, you're okay on the defensive ends.
Yeah,
yeah. Rousseau and Miller ate. They had 4 total sacks against a quarterback in Kyler Murray who can escape.
Yeah,
and their game plan ultimately didn't work that well for them. And so now, if you're the Dolphins, it becomes a all right. Well, he's pretty good now,
right? It's a different Greg Rousseau than last season.
Again, for me too, and we talked with Sal about it, the Ian Rapoport report that Devon Achane's dealing with an ankle sprain. And Sal brought up a good point. Cool, he plays, but what's his real availability? What is he actually able to do then? I mean, he's a speed guy, and if he's dealing with an ankle sprain, that could be a real problem. They're already down Raheem Mostert. So that running game potentially to get the ball away from Tua Tagovailoa to kind of maybe attack the edges again as well. What have you, I think becomes a real big problem for them. Again, until Miami proves to me that they can beat the Bills, I don't think they can. And a lot of it is just we see this team 2 times a year, if not 3 times, and oftentimes it goes from a big talk about Miami's offense, and then the game happens, and they're constantly flustered.
I think also an interesting thing to look at here, talk about Tua in being able to escape, right? In all of his games against the Bills, his most rushing yards was 28.
Really?
Mm-hmm. 28,
huh.
0, 10, 0, 7, 7, 7.
Huh.
Yeah.
Not bad. All right.
And I mean, the one that he had 28, he had 6 rushing attempts.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
So that was one where either the Bills got after him a lot or he was just game planned to run the ball for some reason, which...
Yep.
I mean, that was his first year, too. No, it wasn't his first game against the Bills.
Yeah.
But still.
Cole tweets in, Josh Allen, 4 touchdowns, 300 yards, Bills dub. That'd be a nice game.
I like that. It's a nice round number, too. 4-3.
Does Allen then actually get AFC Offensive Player of the Week?
I hope so.
Be nice.
I mean, 2 weeks in a row with four touchdowns and also getting 300 yards.
Joe Mixon getting the week one.
That's egregious.
What was Joe Mixon's stats last week?
Not good. Well, not bad. They were average.
Not bad. They were fine.
Good enough for AFC player or offensive player of the week.
Let's find out. 30 rushes, 159 yards, and a touchdown. No, that's not bad. That's pretty good.
Yeah, but
he also had three catches for 19 yards.
Rushing attempts was it?
30.
And how many?
It's good for 5.3 yards per carry.
I was gonna say how many yards per carry? Because it doesn't feel that high, but it is.
His longest rush was 13 yards. He was just turning out like 5-yard rushes the whole game.
Man, I don't know.
That is a stat line, and this is no disrespect to Joe Mixon or really running backs anywhere. That is a stat line that, like, after the game, you, like, look up and you're like, that's what he did?
Right.
Like, in a positive way, but you're like, really? He had one big run, and you're like, well, I mean, it was 5.3 yards per carry.
He was efficient.
He was very efficient.
He was
very, very efficient.
He was great. Good job. No. It should not have been AFC Offensive Player of the Week.
That's not bad.
No, it's not bad, but it's not Offensive Player of the Week worthy, I don't think.
I don't know. It's not great.
I feel like there weren't really that many standout offensive.
Especially at the quarterback position.
Right.
Unless it was
not
Allen.
A good week for
Unless it was Tua, but he had 300 yards. I mean, he did have an 80-yard cushion to add.
Yeah.
But again,
he only has the one touchdown pass.
What was how many yards in the air was that pass?
Oh, I have no idea.
I was just curious because, yeah. I mean, if it's, you know, 40 of it is passing yards, then
it's pretty good.
That's decent.
I mean, yeah, Anthony Richardson doesn't even complete 50% of his passes, but he does have the moonshot, which is awesome.
Right, but he completed nine passes for 200 yards is pretty crazy.
He did miss AD Mitchell like four times, but it's fine. I'm not upset about it, Josh.
Hey,
I'm not upset about it.
He's working on it. And you know what? It's fine if he takes time because I don't want to have to worry about the Colts again.
We forget about that. Yeah, the Colts were like well on their way to being like a freaky team.
For like 2 years, the Colts were super good.
And then Andrew Luck surprise retired. Coming off of a year where, yeah, like it was like, oh, Luck's back. He's healthy and the Colts are good. And then he retires.
Oh, look at this young guy, Jonathan Taylor. Where is he coming from?
The Colts were alarmingly close to being a problem. And then for years, they were a playoff team, but with this quarterback here, that quarterback there, and it was just back and forth. And Richardson maybe is going to be finally the guy where it's like, okay. He's our guy now for a few years at least, but we'll see. I mean, he is an electrifying athlete.
The 80-yard touchdown from Tyreek Hill, sorry to backtrack, he caught the ball at the Miami 48-yard line, so it was about like 30 yards in the air.
Okay. That's
close to what you were saying, though.
Yeah, but it's Tua.
I just
Do it three times a game. No, I'm just kidding.
Tua is the closest quarterback we have to Drew Brees, though.
Ooh.
Like, it's not going to be Bo Nix.
I've never thought about that.
Tua is the closest quarterback
to
Drew
Of all the people I would compare him to, Drew Brees would not be someone that enters the mind.
No, I'm fully on it. I think he's Drew Brees.
But think about the...
He's post-injury Drew Brees.
Okay, that's fair. Because the arm talent
is down.
Yeah, because before the injury, I mean...
But Tua puts
Drew
up a
Brees
lot of yards.
Electric.
But in all seriousness, Tua puts up a lot of yards.
Yeah.
Puts up touchdowns. They have games where you're like, this offense is insane. And yet they constantly disappoint. Drew Brees is an interesting look. He is going to be a Hall of Famer. He is New Orleans' greatest ever quarterback. I think many people would argue he is a top 10 quarterback of all time. And yet way too many times in his career, especially near his peak, they were flat out not even in playoff discussions, going 6-10, 7-9, 8-8, what have you, because it felt really empty at times. I think the year he throws like 5,400 yards, they go like 9-7. And like that's the Dolphins.
Saints football there. Yeah.
But that's kind of the Dolphins of like, you know, I mean, we've got fast guys to just get the ball to them, you know, stand your first read. But like they go 10-7 and you know 9-8 and they don't win playoff games, they don't win divisions, they fall flat even though they had a really nice head start. I don't know. It's just I've been thinking about that comparison a lot lately, and I'm somebody that loved Drew Brees growing up, and as the more like I've kind of like developed my taste in quarterbacks, I guess. You know, yeah, Allen of course is on there, but even guys like you know Rodgers in his prime, I was a huge Rodgers guy in his prime, and Anthony Richardson I brought up and stuff like that. Mahomes. I've like lessened on like how I feel about Drew Brees. And now I look at Tua and I'm like, yeah, they're the same guy.
Yeah. And I remember Tua in college, too. I mean, that first game he plays where he comes in the national championship and wins the game.
It's a great throw.
It's such an incredible game. And I'm like, yeah, this guy's going to be a problem. And then he gets drafted to Miami. And remember, like, ooh, that's not great.
There was a tank for Tua movement and stuff like that. I mean, there was, absolutely. Mm-hmm. But, I'm liking that comparison the more it goes on.
Here's a kind of a devilish little what if. What if Tua had the Bills' offensive line?
See, I don't think the Bills' offensive line for much of Allen's career has been great. The last 2 years, I think it's been very, very good.
Then the last 2 years. Because I feel like that'd be a massive upgrade from what they have. Because their offensive line has been nothing, basically.
It's been bad.
It's just they're either injured or they're just not there.
It's tough for me, too, because I think offensive lines can really make quarterback play. Mm-hmm. When you do have guys like Mahomes, Allen, Lamar Jackson, and what have you, they make a bad offensive line or an average offensive line look better. I mean,
right, because
Allen
they have the ability
be the best,
to move.
Yeah, Allen might be the best guy at the position to avoid a sack. Maybe in
Mahomes
his era.
Mahomes is up there.
Jackson's up there.
Yeah. Those three are kind of neck and neck for that moniker of just the best quarterback to avoid sacks.
And for them, it's like, if you just have like a solid offensive line or a good offensive line, like that's all you need. It does feel like guys like Tua, Dak Prescott early in his career.
Brock Purdy.
They need the great offensive lines to give them time to let them get the ball out because they can't really extend the plays.
Right.
They're not looking to extend the plays because they can't. You know, Tua's not going to be moving back there all that much. And that's a big thing for me tonight going into this matchup is if the Bills really do have an edge presence, which based off of Sunday, they may.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of their the sacks weren't like the sacks you look up on highlight films. Don't get me wrong. I mean, one of them is Rousseau literally just kind of runs Murray out of bounds, and he's behind the line of scrimmage,
it's
so
still
it counts.
A sack.
But with Tua, he's not going to be running. He is just going to be throwing the ball away. And especially against a quarterback like Tua, that is a win. Where with Mahomes or Jackson or Allen, it is, no, you got to get them down on the ground. You have to lose like 4 or 5 yards. You have to put them in a bad spot. Where with Miami, it's like first down, throws it away. That's a win.
Yep.
That is a win. And that was a win against guys like Brady and Manning as well, because they were not guys that could extend the play, even run themselves for, you know, 7-8 yards to carry it on. They were, though, the wicked smart guys where, I mean, when you did get a sack, it was like that's the biggest win ever.
Yeah. And I think it's also interesting, too, to look at how Miami game planned last year for the Bills because, I mean, I remember the first game it was Tua was throwing the ball in like under 2 seconds. You know, like there'd be this quick slant route or drag route or whatever, and the ball would be out of the pocket before you could even blink and have one of your pass rushers kind of get to him. It wasn't even a pressure. It was just, you know, the ball is already gone. You're not even close to tackling him or getting to him. And I'm interested to see if that's going to change at all. I don't think it would if it worked so well.
I think that has to be the game plan.
But at the same time, though, if it worked so well, why didn't they win the game? Right? I mean,
oh, yeah.
There's obviously moments in that where, you know, Tua misses the pass or he has to hold on to it a little longer. He gets sacked. He gets pressured, whatever. But I wonder, with another year of his progression, if you want to call it that, will the Dolphins be changing that at all? And I don't think they should.
I don't know if they can
keep doing that, especially now with this new level of Greg Rousseau, the return of Von Miller, which, again, we're hoping that's a return because it's only been 1 week. But at the same time, even when he wasn't getting to Kyler Murray last week, he still was causing problems. And it kind of frees up Greg Rousseau.
Mm-hmm.
So I think it's really more so what will the Dolphins do against the Bills? I don't think it's ever been what do the Bills have to do against the Dolphins? It's okay, the Bills are going to figure it out because the Dolphins have never figured it out.
Yeah, I want to because I'm not coming off as very humble about this, but like you have to prove that you can beat the Bills.
Yeah. And again, I respect their offense. Their offense has burned you before.
Oh, yeah.
I still remember the Jalen Waddle touchdown. I think it was his first touchdown in the NFL, maybe. It was his first against the Bills, where he breaks over the middle for like a 55-yard touchdown.
And he's gone, yeah.
And he torches the two safeties like nothing. But just because you respect their offense doesn't mean that they're going to beat you.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, sure, they might have a couple flashy plays here and there, but a couple flashy plays doesn't win you a game. Sometimes it does, but when you have another quarterback on the other side that can do that and more, you have to have another element, and they just haven't had that.
Yeah.
Their other element has been the sun, and that's it.
Trevor tweets in, defense has to step up. If Greg cooks like he did last week, it's a good sign. Keon Cook, the DK, Shakir, and Josh are all going to play well. Bills by a billion. Well, actually, 34-24. I think there's another 34-24 prediction here as well.
By a billion.
Yeah, William tweets in, yeah, 34-24 as well. So there's a few of those predictions. I think that's a good scoreline. As I mentioned in the first hour, me personally, I can't see this team not putting up over 21 points. This offense does really well. The quarterback specifically does very well against Miami routinely. I can't see it changing. I like what the offense looks like. I think they have playmakers all over the field. It's just none of them are necessarily named guys yet, but you saw Shakir last week. On Sunday, I can't even really say last week. It's that is a recent day, but you saw Shakir. He, by the way, it's something that I'm almost upset at myself that I haven't brought up enough. The balance he has to be able to just take a shot, spin around, and be fine to keep going and get another 5, 6, 7 yards or what have you. Incredible. And just, I think Shakir's going to be a major factor in tonight. I want to see Kincaid be a major factor just because I do find him to be sort of an X factor for this team. Jay tweets it in, Dalton Kincaid feast. I think he's an X factor for this team, and I think they need him to be for the longevity of the season. I think every now and then, you know, him having only 2 targets, fine. But, you know, again, I really do believe they are serious about the everyone eats. I mean, 9 guys caught the ball last week, 10 were targeted. But he, I believe, is a difference maker at the tight end position specifically. When you have an elite tight end, it causes problems. Look what Isaiah Likely was able to do for Baltimore on opening night when Baltimore's whole game plan was, Lamar, you do whatever it is you do. Do it well. It's going to be awesome.
Yeah.
Zay Flowers is going to run no routes past the 5-yard line. Everything's going to be screens, bubble screens, you know, behind the line of scrimmage. It's going to be awesome. Everyone's going to love it. And you're going to do crazy stuff. Isaiah, that was their whole offensive game plan.
Yeah,
Likely was the only guy going down the field.
Right,
and so of course you've seen what Travis Kelce does for Kansas City when he is able to get open, when he's able to dominate both cornerbacks and linebackers because of the mismatch there. It is huge, and I think Kincaid has all of the abilities, not necessarily to be Kelce, but to be an elite tight end in the game.
And I think also too, this offense has the ability to keep defense is guessing.
Mm-hmm.
And you can't cover everybody. And if you have 2-3 guys on one, there's going to be 2 or 3 guys on your offense that are wide open or in a good matchup where you can have them beat their defender. And I know Jeremy brought it up earlier with Keon Coleman. What are the chances that Keon Coleman goes up for a crazy catch tonight against Jalen Ramsey?
I think it's high. I
agree with him too. I think it's very high. But I am also
I don't know about Jalen Ramsey, but
well, who's Ramsey going to be guarding?
I think he's going to be rotating.
Well, okay. Who do you think is going to be the most? Which player will he be on the most?
I'd say Keon.
Probably then is Keon because yeah. I think
it makes the most
Jeremy
sense.
Jeremy brought up that he didn't play any snaps in the slot. He's an outside guy.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah. Oh man, it would be
Keon. Or Matt Collins.
It's going to be Keon.
Yeah.
Oh man! Now I'm less because I was like I'm less convinced on the Ramsey thing. I was imagining like the moment it's a different cornerback, they all of a sudden try the shot down the field.
Yeah, right. As soon as you get a sub or a change, because you know, they're killing us with this guy, Jalen, go over there and guard him. Boom, Keon Coleman.
Yeah.
You know, it's there's
that was sort of the idea I was
and
having.
And again,
with it.
That to me, I kind of prefer that over mm-hmm. than over the. Well, let's wait for one guy to get open, and if he's not open, we're still going to force the ball to him.
I feel like his ego was going to say, I'm going to guard the rookie.
Yeah. It could be that, too, where I'm going to give him his sort of welcome to the NFL moment.
Right, yeah.
Because Keon did have a good game. I mean, mm-hmm. led the team in targets, 4 catches, over 50 yards, does have the 50-50 ball. There could be that element, too, of, Ramsey's like, I'm going to shut the rookie down. That, then, could be a fun battle as well. Keon, maybe my most not most impressed. My favorite thing he did outside of the 50-50 catch was early in the game drawing 2 penalties for a guy.
That's the one thing I'm concerned about, though, because in the one penalty, like I said, he was kind of fighting back a little bit.
I mean, there's always going to be hand fighting a little bit.
Right,
yeah.
But you don't want to kind of counteract yourself there and get a penalty back
you
and
do,
negate.
But yeah, well, yeah. But you do want to draw attention to it.
True, true. That's fair. But I feel like Jalen Ramsey's the type of guy to get that out of somebody.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
But
yeah.
Hey, Keon Coleman 6'3", Jalen Ramsey 6'1". Just saying.
That's not much of a mismatch, though.
But.
That's concerning.
But. Coleman's got hops.
That's right. That's right. Then the basketball skills, they show up often.
And we honestly, you saw it a little bit in the first game.
You saw it in the 51-yard catch or the big catch.
The 50-50 ball, yeah.
He turned his body, boxed him out.
Could work. My only issue, again, is just the size difference is not massive there.
All right, yeah. I'm overplaying that a little bit. It's 2 inches.
Give me the 5'10 corner where he's looking at Keon going, please don't throw it.
Wait, how tall is Kader Kohou? Because that's the other.
We'll find it on the break. 803-0550, the number to call for your predictions for tonight's game.
Kader Kohou is 5'10.
There we go. There it is.
There it is.
This is the Northtown Automotive Extra Point Show, and you're listening to WGR.
Yeah, I think that's what we want to see is making sure that different guys are getting different touches, and that means guys are in different spots, but at the same time doing their job, getting open, catching the ball. In terms of operation, you know, we had a bunch of false starts and got to clean that up, got to clean up some of the penalties. Again, getting the play call in as quickly as possible, especially on the road, and me getting that out to the team and making adjustments in a timely manner. So it all goes hand in hand and takes 11 guys out there to produce a really good product, and that's what we're trying to do.
That was Buffalo Bills quarterback Josh Allen earlier this week with the media. They mentioned there, you know, getting the play call on time and especially on the road and what have you. And this is not really Josh's point, but it's kind of where I want to take it. Outside of the weather, what does Miami actually have like a home field advantage? Like, is it actually a place where you're like, oh, man, I don't want to go to Miami. I don't want to do this.
No.
And like, and I get it. The Bills have lost in the playoffs at home. Like, yeah. And home field advantage can oftentimes be a little bit overplayed. I understand that.
For certain teams, yes. But for other teams, I think it's definitely a factor. I mean, look at Green Bay, right? Lambeau Field has always been...
It's a hellhole.
A hard place to play in. Yeah.
It's brimstone and cold. It's not fun. No one likes going there.
Yeah. And, I mean, Buffalo at times.
Yeah.
I remember there was a clip of Julian Edelman.
Mm-hmm.
A few months ago, maybe even a while longer than that, but he was talking about his time playing and the fan base he hated but also loved the most,
mm-hmm.
and it was Buffalo because he's like, yeah, you know, it was hard to play there, but I loved the passion. Even though we'd go in there and beat the bleep out of them, I'd still have 4-year-olds in the stands flipping me off.
Yeah,
like, and like, you know, that's good home field advantage right there. Like, your fans are fans that just don't give up.
I find Miami, and it is sort of specifically, I just never find that to be like a hard place for teams to go play outside of the mm-hmm. weather.
Yeah.
No one talks about the crowd noise. Oh, it's really hard to get calls in on the field. Right. You know, we got to go to a silent count. You never hear that. You always hear, it was 150 degrees on the field because the sun was pointing at us for half the game.
Right.
You know, and now it's a night game.
Yeah. And I mean, it's still, I think Sal was talking about it earlier. It's still going to be pretty hot down there.
Still Florida.
At game time. It's going to be like 80 degrees at kickoff. But it's at night. There's no worry about just sitting in the sun.
Mm-hmm.
It's a lot different of a
environment
in that sense. But also, I mean, everyone talks about it, and you see it on the TV. How many Bills fans show up there every single year? Partially because of how many people from Buffalo live down there.
And that's another thing too. That is one of the perfect stadiums for it to be a transient stadium
mm-hmm.
where you get a lot of fans. You know, Buffalo fans, of course, we play Miami once a year down there. We always know it's going to be a trip. But there's going to be other fans like the Colts who will be like, oh.
It's a nice place
to
travel. I can
go down to Miami. Or right. Like Vegas was like this for a few years once they first, you know, came into the league. It was like, Vegas is a really good trip. Nashville mm-hmm. is Seattle. But
I mean, that one's a little more obscure for us. But for other teams, I mean, it's not that bad. But Nashville is another one, too. I mean, next time the Bills play the Titans, I'm going. I've already decided.
Yeah, I was going to say, you go to Nashville a lot.
I love Nashville.
You're like, any reason to go, you're like, I'm gone.
I'm going to the Sabres game there this year.
Yep.
Hopefully. We'll see.
I did not realize, real quick on that, I did not realize how close, the arena is like literally Main Street.
I didn't realize that. It's like, you can see it. It's a stone's throw from like the first bar on Broadway.
Yeah, did not know that.
Yeah, it's great.
We went to go. I went and visited my girlfriend's family this summer. We went out to lunch mm-hmm. to get a famous like Nashville hot chicken.
Yeah.
And the whole thing. And all of a sudden, like, you know, there's the Predators Arena. And I'm like, oh, that's a really good spot.
Yeah, right.
Good
right.
for them. That's perfect. Yeah. I just didn't know.
Yeah. I mean, but no, it's an interesting like concept, because there are teams that are harder to play in their stadiums, in their arenas. I mean, Dallas back in the day, right, when it was America's team, and you know, the Cowboys are the best team in the NFL. That
I didn't say now they're a tough team to be at home, just because I mean their home record is typically very good.
Well, not last year.
Well, the playoff game, not good.
Green Bay beat Dallas, and then it started snowing in Dallas.
Oh, that's right. That did happen. But yeah, I
you got beat so bad that your climate changed.
It's something I've been thinking about too. It's like, you know, and they're on the road, and I'm like, do I really care that much that they're in Miami? Like, as we brought up, especially now it's in the night game. I mean, sure, it's in the 80s, but like, let's not act like Buffalo doesn't hit the 80s. We had a warm summer this year.
If the game would have been here this Sunday, it would be in the 80s.
Yeah, so like, I don't find that to be as intimidating. Mm-hmm. I did listen to Manti Te'o. He's with Good Morning Football, kind of as one of their guests, hosts, and stuff like that.
He's been a really good addition.
I enjoy Manti Te'o. He has his documentary, obviously, on Netflix. I found him to be a captivating speaker. But listening to him talk about the Bills-Dolphins, like, he was making a big deal about, like, Jordan Poyer is now on the Dolphins compared to the Bills, and how, like, it's going to be this massive thing. And I'm like, most Bills fans feel bad. Like they're upset to see Poyer go more because they want to see him retire a Bill, and less so, like, oh, man, like, his ability. What are we going to do?
No, that's never been my fear. I mean,
not this year.
The only thing that I don't think will happen is Allen will hurdle him, because I think he'll be expecting that.
I just don't.
That would be hilarious if he did
that. It would.
See, that'll feel bad for him. Like, oh man,
no.
Like, don't.
You picked a division. You could have gone. Well, maybe you couldn't have gone anywhere because you don't know where the contracts were coming from. But you picked a division rival.
Mm-hmm.
That's on you.
That's on you.
That's on you.
That one's on you. It's just. You know, and he's talking about how, like, it's now a bad thing that Allen went to. He said, you know, 7 receivers. It was 9. But, you know, it's all of a sudden a bad thing. And, he doesn't have that one guy he can just go to. And I'm like, well, yeah, because he's going to the open guy. They're getting open. They're catching the ball. I'm not saying Stephon Diggs didn't do that, but there were times last year where he was not able to get open. He often did against Miami. His games against Miami were often great. 3 touchdowns, 150 yards, like that. Stephon Diggs usually ate the Dolphins.
Mm-hmm.
It was a problem for them. I'm having a hard time acting like Miami's got this great defense and that McDermott's defenses are not going to be ready to go. The first half against Arizona, if that continued and the Bills, let's say, won in a shootout like 40-38, I would sit here and go, okay, defense is a problem.
Yeah.
This is going to be a problem.
Well, and
But in the second half, with a mobile quarterback, they completely figured it out.
Yeah.
And they let up a field goal. Because the special team stuck out. The defense let up a field goal.
Yeah.
So I have a hard time acting like, well, the page is turned. You know, now it's Miami's time. How much longer, honestly, and this is more, you know, years down the road, how much longer is Miami actually going to have Tyreek Hill? Like, at the peak of his powers?
2 years.
2 years? Maybe 3? Jalen Waddle,
if he stays there long term, he's only going to have about 2 more years of prime.
Yeah.
If that. Because he's not young. I don't know actually how old he is, but I know he's not on the younger end of being a wide receiver. He is 30.
And he's somebody, I think he is a much more complete wide receiver than some give him credit for, but he is somebody that his best trait, of course, is his speed and his acceleration.
Yeah.
And so if that goes, you do have to then all of a sudden start wondering, like, all right. You know, where's the cliff here? But again, for me, it has just become, until I see a Dolphins defense actually stop Josh Allen, and, you know, not him getting in his own way. Because let's remember, in that last game last year to end the regular season, Allen had a few moments where, like, they were marching down the field, turnover.
He threw two interceptions.
And so, you know,
words are hard.
That also was a big problem for Allen at times last year, just like the offense moving and interception and fumble. He had one on Sunday.
Yeah, but again, the one Sunday was
also the give and take.
Right, but it's also, I wonder, I mean, looking at a let's say, a Josh Allen turnover, right? The stereotypical, oh, there's the interception, there's the fumble.
Yep.
The fumble he had, it was kind of a fluke. If he doesn't run into Spencer Brown there, I don't think he fumbles the ball. Because I think he was kind of falling in that direction and then has to move out of Spencer Brown's way. And as he does so, gets a little more off kilter and loses the ball.
There's also Curtis Samuel in the middle of the field wide open.
Well, right, yes. But at the same time, after that, there's factors there that probably would have eliminated the fumble had he stepped to his right,
a
second sooner. But it's something where I look at the Bills defense from last week and looking forward to this week. They were all in the right places they need to be. The tackling just wasn't there. Because, I mean, Dorian Williams was in the right spot time and time again, but just couldn't get the tackle right, which is a problem, yes, only if it continues. But the fact that you're in the right positioning, I think, is a very good sign.
Well,
because there was never a time where it's like, man, that guy got burned. There was the one chance where, you know, Rasul Douglas drifts a little bit and Marvin Harrison Jr. is wide open, but Kyler Murray doesn't even see him. And if he does, he can't get the ball to him.
Yeah, it's more indicative of long-term success, where it's just like, you know, he got you, but you were in the right position, or you made the right play, what have you, he just got you. You know, he's also getting paid millions to do this.
Yeah, and that's obviously, you know, frustrating, and it's not good, but at the same time, it's not the end of the world if your team is always in the right position. Well, okay, if it's always happening, it's the end of the world. But if it happens for a couple weeks where your team's in the right position, your tackles are just aren't getting home, then, you know, there's stuff to work on, but it's not, oh, season's over.
Yeah.
Defense is broken. No, it's fine. You just have to get your timing better. And you have a second-year player in Dorian Williams stepping into a role that he wasn't expected to do this year. You have a bunch of rookies or second-year players with little experience like Kyer Elam, who, I mean, I call him a second-year player just because of how last year went in terms of injuries. He didn't really play last year.
Well, injuries and then just inactive. I mean,
technically he's a third-year player, but I look at him as a second-year player because of his experience. And obviously Cole Bishop being a rookie, if he does play, you know, that's – there's another thing.
I hope he does.
I hope he does too.
Because he is somebody – I was very, very excited about that pick just because
– a lot of people were. And it's not just the Buffalo thing. It was
– well, if they make that work, it's all of a sudden it's like, cool, there's
– there's new Micah Hyde. There's new Jordan Poyer.
Yeah. Just go down the list. There's the guy. So it's going to be – that one's going to be fun. I just saw a tweet, trying to get it again, but I remember the stats. It's not on the Bills or Dolphins. It's on the Jets and Aaron Rodgers. Aaron Rodgers has not thrown a 300-yard game since week 14 of 2021.
I saw that this morning.
To put in
it's
context,
insane.
To put that in context, Andy Dalton has done so three times with three different teams since then.
And also,
that's awesome.
We're closing in on a year since Daniel Jones has thrown a touchdown pass to his own team.
Are we really?
I think we might get to it before these next batch of games.
Oh, wow. Want to know a fun stat? The Steelers are the only team in the AFC North that has not had a touchdown, yet they're the only team in the AFC North that has won a game.
That's real football
Mike
right
Tomlin
there. That's real football right there. The happiest I've been was watching that game kind of like tick down and be like, Steelers are keeping it close. It's Mike Tomlin football, and then the game ends, and then you realize not only did they not score a touchdown, but they won. And I'm like, that's Steeler football, baby, right there. They have the mandate of heaven. They have to. they are so inept on offense, and yet they are just going to win 9-10 games, sneak in the playoffs. That's the definition of the mandate of heaven. It's not the team that wins the Super Bowl. It's the team that, by all accounts, should be terrible. And by the end of the year, they're like, nah, they're picking in the 20s of the draft. They had like 9-10 wins. They made a playoff game. Was it bad? Sure. But they were there.
So Daniel Jones, last time he threw an offensive touchdown, there were two of them, both in week 2 last year.
Man, that is I know he was injured last year, but oh my goodness.
Fair. But if he doesn't throw a touchdown on Sunday, we will surpass 365 days since he's thrown an offensive touchdown. Because the 17th is next Tuesday.
God, he's gonna make that Joe Shane and Brian Dable are gonna lose their jobs because of that quarterback.
Mm-hmm.
And that's unfortunate because I think they're great general managers and coaches.
Yeah, but
to put that stat into context, though, because obviously he does get hurt, he does play 4 more games in the year, though.
Oh, yeah. He plays weeks 3, 4, and 5, and also 9. Week 9. Why was he inactive for 3 weeks? Was that also injury?
I have to look at that. But, and even then, too, he didn't throw a touchdown pass in week 1 against Dallas.
In those 4 weeks he played, he threw 3 more interceptions. On the year that he only played 6 games, he threw 2 touchdown passes and 6 interceptions.
I love the Giants. 803-0550, the number to call for your predictions on the Bills taking on the Miami Dolphins later on tonight. 8:15 kickoff. That's going to be on Amazon Prime for those locally not here in Buffalo. For here in Buffalo, of course, you can hear the game right here on WGR, but also it'll be available on Channel 7. We'll be right back after a quick timeout. This is WGR. Quick final segment here as we wrap up a Thursday here on the Northtown Automotive Extra Point Show. It is brought to you by Northtown Automotive. Whatever you're looking for, you'll find it at Northtown. Shop online at northtownauto.com. We've also gotten connected to our fans, and that's brought to you by Northtown Kia. Shop online at northtownkia.com. Very excited for tonight. 8:15 kickoff. The Bills will begin week two for the NFL as they travel down to Miami to take on the Dolphins. Amazon Prime game. Those locally, though, here in Buffalo, will find it on Channel 7 or right here on WGR. We'll have our official pregame coverage start at 3 p.m. with Shope and the Bulldog. That'll go all the way to kickoff at 8:15. And then we'll hand the baton off to Chris Brown, Eric Wood, and Sal Capaccio, who will be on the call from the Northwest Bank broadcast booth.
I'm not going to do it, but what's your prediction?
I was about to ask you just because I knew you wouldn't do it.
I beat you to the punch.
I knew you wouldn't do it. I kind of wanted to see if you would do it today.
No. Nope.
I kind of have been liking the 34-24 predictions we've had from people.
I do.
I've been liking those.
10 points, I want it to be more than 10 points.
Well, see, this is my only thing, though. I actually don't love the idea of them winning by double digits. I'm going with a 31-24. These games have gotten closer. Mm-hmm. Miami is still a good team. I think ultimately what comes down to this is the defenses. I simply do not trust Miami's defense to be able to stop Josh Allen. And while I think the Bills' defense will have a few issues here, I think Tyreek Hill absolutely could have an explosive touchdown, Waddle as well. I think the injuries at the run game is going to cause them some issues. Mm-hmm. I think the Bills' defensive line has really looked good here to start the year. Yes, it's week one, but ultimately with the Arizona Cardinals game plan being attack the edges and it failing spectacularly, you got to wonder what Miami has to do then on a short week as well.
Does it matter to you? Okay, let's say Tyreek Hill has another 80-yard touchdown like cool. He did against the Jaguars. Yeah. Does it matter to you when?
I mean, don't win the game.
Well, obviously, but I'm saying it's second drive of the first quarter.
Oh, it's less than ideal. It's less than ideal.
Right, but
how
much does that affect this Bills team? Because in the past, it hasn't affected them at all. There's been times where you have big plays from the Dolphins.
Yeah, I mean, and that's where the vets come in. And that's where the vets come in of, all right, settle it down. I mean,
they don't have that many.
They've still got vets on this roster, though, especially in the D-line. Linebackers now, this is Bernard's second year starting, so he's been through this.
Right.
Yeah, they've got some of the rookies, but even guys like Mike Edwards and DeMar Hamlin have been here for a number of years, Taylor Rapp as well.
I'm just curious how much that matters now compared to years prior, because years prior, like you said, you have the veteran leadership. It's, we're fine. Let's just go out and do our thing. But now it just feels a little different. So that, I think, is like one of the vulnerable spots is if that happens early, you really got to, Josh, don't go out there and be sugar high, Josh.
It becomes ball possession.
Yes.
And making sure you're playing smart.
Let's still play our game and possess the ball like we plan to, if that's the plan.
Yep. That's going to do it for me and Josh today. Again, kickoff at 8:15. Our official pregame starts at 3 o'clock. But coming up next, Sabres Live. You're listening to WGR.